Hello, my name is Jeff Jacobs. I spent 12 years at NBC Sports, and where once upon a time I worked with a young Steve Hasthook. And for the past 13 years, I've been at Viacom, more specifically MTV, then more Viacom, and now probably more MTV-ish. And I run a lot of production planning, a lot of operations, a lot of other stuff that people don't want to deal with. You know the feeling? Mm-hmm. And it's all good, and that's me. Thank you for inviting me.
Great to have you. Steve, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Mandy. I'm Steve Hasthook. I'm a Senior Vice President of Operations for CNBC. I've been with NBC Universal 30 years. Somehow managed to skate through that for all those years. I spent some time in sports. I spent some time in a lot of time in news, a lot of time in production. And about 15 years ago, they asked me if I would build a building for CNBC as a project manager. I said no. And here I am. They said yes, and I got to architect the new facility for CNBC. And I've been in the technology space ever since. So I'm responsible for all of the production, whether it's scenic design, whether it's staffing, special events, studio operations, and now, you know, how do we advance in technology? And I think we should have a good conversation.
Absolutely.
And I brought somebody that actually really does know how to do stuff with
Woo-hoo.
Me.
Andy.
Hi, I'm Andy Barsh. I'm the Senior Creative Director at CNBC. I never had the opportunity to work with a young Steve Hasthook.
It was a long time ago.
Yeah. I started my career as a TV director. I worked in daytime syndication, sketch comedy, music. I arrived at CNBC about 10 years ago, started off as a show director there, and worked my way up to doing all the special projects for CNBC, including set design, political debates, political events, shows with CEOs, audiences. Now I kind of work with a team and run a team that's working to figure out how artificial intelligence can help to enhance our production workflows and distribution models, and also how that artificial intelligence and data can work with augmented reality for our air and products.
Very cool. Yeah. Thank you. So the conversation with these experts and thought leaders here is really talking about the change in the media industry and how it's changed significantly. And all three of you have seen these changes and you've had to act quickly on these changes. So can you talk a little bit about like how you see the industry as it is now and some of the demanding challenges that you have? Start.
Audrey.
Go, Steve.
You know, you say changes. So obviously, everyone knows the changes of linear to digital and to mobile. That's obvious. Yeah. Everyone's talking about that. It's funny. I said that I was at MTV and Viacom for about 13 years or something like that. When we first got there, every show was one show. Every show was one show. You went, you did a show. You had a creative, you had a conception, you had planning, and you made one show. Now every show is eight shows. In this new digital multi-platform mobile world, obviously, and this isn't anything that everybody doesn't know, every show is no longer one show, every show is eight shows. So if it's a Video Music Awards, and I'm sure it's the same with many of your shows, Video Music Awards, it's not just the show that's on the air from 2 to 3 hours, linear, have a nice day. It's the pre-show on digital, the adjacent show on mobile, it's the multi-platform shows on every other tier, it's the show that we're doing for it to preview before and after. So you say change, of course it's change. It's change from every purview of the business, from production and more staff and more creative to engineering with encoders in a compound or at home base, slicing and dicing and encoding and pushing the same show or different shows to 12 different places. You say change? I imagine the biggest change is linear to digital and mobile.
It's funny. I apologize for being hot. This guy has like a 6-foot gait. Try chasing him around the city is a challenge. So for me, I've seen this change constantly through my career, right? So we went from mono to stereo, from analog standard def to digital standard def into HD into 4K. And so we've seen all this progression. So this is just the next evolution. For us, the trick is how do we make our information better? And for us, we have a very specific product. We're a business news provider, an investors network. So our audience is highly educated in the space that we cover, and they have a high level of requirement, and many of them would love a level of personalization. So what used to be okay, right? For years we had markets coverage, broad markets coverage, and then every once in a while we would dip into personal finance and get killed because our viewers are wealthy investors. So we would try that, and we would try this, and we would try that. And in the old days, you had to try things. Well, nowadays, we're testing things online. We're testing things with our other products. We can widen out our gap. We can go, we have something called Make It Now, which is small business. So we're able to get outside of the niche of the content that our investors want and find a place for those other people without ever degrading the main network. So that's where we're at, like, right now. The question is, there's three business networks now and 100 business websites. How are we the last man standing? And we're going to be, if I have anything to do with it. The way you do that is you find, and so you have a certain amount of people in production. My team is about 200 strong. I'm probably not going to get 400 or 600 as we widen out. By the way, you guys are all familiar with the ability to distribute channels and the cost of distributing a channel. Well, you know, I could put five channels up there, but I can't produce five channels. So how do we get more out of our employees? I'm an employee person. My career's been made by good people. And so I don't want to eliminate jobs. I don't want to automate functions unless they are value added. So if I can automate, and so over the years we've automated ingest and archiving. Guess what? I added 10% to the ingest and archiving staff, and I added 10% of the highest end individuals that knew how to manage data. So that's kind of the evolution that we've made. So now the next step is, what do we do? And this is where, so Andy is my most senior employee. Andy is my most valuable employee because he's one of those people that can go into a show, he can go into a debate, he can go into a big election night coverage, he can direct. Guess what? He's not directing. I have taken him completely out of his job and had him do nothing but figure out what to do in our future. And maybe if you want to tell me what
you're doing. That's no pressure. So I see us at... I see us at this phase where the production we're doing and distributing to the five different locations from the single, we're still in the electronic catalog phase of production on the internet and on mobile devices, right? So when Amazon first started, we took just a catalog we'd get in the mail and we made those hyperlinks clickable, and wow, we could pay online, but it was still just an electronic catalog. And if you look at Amazon now, there are suggestions. Oh, you're buying a microphone. You may also like a chair and a platform. Right, that's what people buy together, and that's a dynamic thing that's always changing depending on what people are buying. So, you know, Steve mentions, where do we go from here? And the project I'm working on for most of my time at CNBC now is, how do we attach enhanced metadata to every piece of content that we create so that we can enhance our production workflows, so that we can have a more dynamic, personalized distribution model, right? That we're not trying to say, well, here's a web extra, right, and we're deciding what it is. We're looking at individuals and being able to say, well, how can we create a show for you, right? How can we say, we're gonna do a story about real estate, right? And we're gonna try to hit everything for everybody, our core investor group, but we also have this 10% of the audience who are not core investor group. They're retail investors who are interested in more pedestrian ways of investing, you know, and that they're not in investing for hedge funds and things like that. So how do we do that? There's a couple ways that needs to happen. On the distribution end, we need to be able to think about how are we producing content so that we can mix and match stories and create a new stack for each individual user that comes and learn about that individual as time goes by. So that, you know, yeah, I keep skipping that minute and a half real estate clip that you give me. So in the future now, we're gonna give you the 45-second version or the 20-second version of that. So that affects how we produce. So we're not producing just one linear story about real estate. We're in a studio producing snippets. Maybe it's in threes, right? A minute 30, a 45, and a 20, make up the times. It doesn't matter. And so that we can restack and distribute those times. You know, editorially, I say, you have to learn about real estate. So I'm gonna give you that 20 seconds so we still have some editorial control over. That's on the distribution side, but how do we start producing all this massive content, right? So through functions like natural language processing and graphic extraction and facial recognition, we're able to learn a lot about the video in real time as we create it. And we're working with our media labs at NBC Universal to get these technologies to work in real time. NLP is a little easier than the graphics in real time. But we're at a point where in a test environment, we can be up here having this conversation. The artificial intelligence can be listening to us and make suggestions of content. So as a producer and a director, we don't have to go in with a full boat of information. I can say, hey, Steve, did you hear about Tesla over the last 6 months? The AI picks it up and delivers us a six-month Tesla chart that we don't have to order. It can deliver video of Tesla for us. It can give us an Elon Musk headshot. So now we're looking at artificial intelligence ways to to create lots of little control rooms with fewer people to run them, right? So we can keep the same headcount and producing more content. Mm-hmm. And then we distribute it with the enhanced metadata. And everybody's getting what they want out of our brand.
About 5 years ago, I told my boss, I work for the chairman, and I told him there's no way we're ever going to eliminate an editor because an editor makes good judgment decisions. Makes sense, right? Guess what? He's creating clips with parameters that are definable, and he's finding cuts ins and outs, and then the engine is learning from its mistakes. So what he did is he put a producer on it. So you cut it, the machine is cutting clips, or whatever you want to call this thing, is cutting clips. The producer says, yeah, that out is really loose. Huh. The intelligence engine says, oh, bless you. Next time, let's move the out point sooner.
When we manually move an edit when we work within this device, the computer is looking for why we do that. Because we tried with me, editors, executive producers to teach the machine how we make an edit, and it wasn't working. So what they did was they attached the artificial intelligence to the editor so it can try to find the trends on why we're choosing certain outs. And we're producing a 3.5 minute headline show with three clips, graphics, music, transitions, and hyperlinked graphics at the bottom so you can skip through the show every hour automatically for the past 9-10 months.
That's magnificent. It's amazing. Jeff, you have an interesting story to tell. You've been, for the past 3 years, working on a project, very metadata-driven. Would you like to share that with everybody?
So you're talking about digitization of our library. I know it's gotten a little bit of press. It's really not a big deal. But we recognized a couple of years back that MTV had 35 years of gold in the vault. And we realized that there was a sub-basement somewhere that had Indiana Jones warehouse type of boxes with 35 years of tapes and then some. We always wanted to digitize the vault, really for three reasons. In the production group, we just wanted to reuse some of the old stuff. But the three reasons we always knew that it was worth digitizing the archives was reuse and old content to make new content, sustainability of the content just to protect it, and then third, probably monetization, or at least people want to hear that. But truly monetization, and we just started working on that recently. Getting funding for digitizing the vault is challenging. I'm sure everyone knows that. Everyone who's ever tried to do something that doesn't drive direct revenue directly knows how hard it could be to fund such a project, whether it's capital or OpEx, et cetera. But we always knew we wanted to do it. We knew we had great stuff. We just couldn't get the senior leadership to allocate the funds and to go for it. Also, there was talent considerations. We'd start digitizing an interview with a Kurt Loder from 1987 where Billy Joel said something about Uptown Girl and his wife. And if we digitize that, I mean, it's like a 2-hour interview behind Long Island. So if we digitized it now and it came out the wrong way because it was a different context, does he come back to us and say, whoa, I gave that interview to Kurt Loder at MTV News 30 years ago. Why did I just see it on Hulu? Because you guys monetized it and gave it to Netflix or where'd that go? So there was a lot of talent considerations, et cetera. We tried probably for, maybe 3 years to fund the digitization of the vault. It was such a hurdle. Shouldn't be, but it was such a hurdle. Then what really got it done was, all of our tapes were in a library. In like five libraries. Sarah Nix could tell me a lot more about this, but like in five libraries around the city. And so all the tapes are in a library. Then Michael Jackson dies. Michael Jackson dies, and we're in the control room live, and we're doing a live show from like 9 to 11 or 10 to 12. We're in the control room. I'm in the front deck. My boss at the time, Dave Sirolnick, was in the front deck. He was producing 2 hours of phone-ins, live in and outs and everything. And Judy McGrath, who was then the chairman, and Van Toffler walked in. They leaned over to Dave, and she's like, Dave, make sure you get the clip of Michael kissing Lisa Marie Presley at the VMAs from 4 years ago. Make sure you get that clip in. And he turns to me, he turns to her, and he goes, Judy, we're not going to have that tonight, maybe tomorrow. And he turns to, and she goes, what? Why not? He turns to me, says, Jeff, why don't you tell her? I mean, like, you know, schmuck.
Deliver so, the bad news.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. You know, it was always, you know, when in doubt, look for the schmuck in the room. And I turn to her, I'm like, oh, hi, Judy. Well, the thing is, Michael was pronounced dead at 6:15 p.m. tonight. And she goes, yeah, and? I go, well, the library closes at 5:30. But actually that was really to make a point, because actually the true story is everybody hustled and ran back to work, but I'm just trying to make a point. So that really got it on everybody's radar. Everybody's radar was like, oh wow, we should have digital accessibility. And you know, I schlepped people out to the NBA, out in Secaucus to look at what they're doing and how they monetize and all that. But then finally, it wasn't good enough. Then Whitney Houston died on a Saturday night at a Grammys party, the night before the Grammys. So Whitney Houston dies on Saturday night, and we all rush back into the city to go live that night, because Whitney is Whitney, and we were still MTV, and we all ran back to the city. So we're not getting ready to do like a live 10 o'clock show with Whitney Houston because she died, because this was a big deal, as you would imagine, and we're looking for footage. So we're looking for footage. Obviously, it's a Saturday night. The library's closed. We're not digital. And we're looking under people's desks for tapes and looking all over. And we're starting to like right-click on YouTube. And we're looking for Whitney Houston stuff. Finally, someone's like, oh, I'm a genius. Let's go to Getty. We have an account with Getty Images. Let's go to Getty Images and download video. I'm like, we're spending money on Whitney Houston video? And everyone's like, fine, just do what you have to do. Let's just get the video. Let's shoot first, ask questions later. So the kid goes to Getty Images, downloads some great Whitney Houston red carpet stuff. We're airing it, and I'm watching Whitney Houston, and she's on like the Video Music Awards red carpet. I'm like, that's our footage. She goes, yeah. I go, you just paid for my footage? She's walking on the VMAs 2 years ago? Are you kidding me? And that was actually pretty good, because I was able to show it to our leadership. And although they were always into it, just get, you know, allocating funds is not easy, no matter who you are. So I was able to use that instance to fund the digitization of the library, otherwise known as the Vault Project. You know, I don't want to take up the whole half hour but with this, but 3 years later, thanks to actually some people in the room, I see Lauren and Sarah and Sally, what's her name, from the metadata guru, and the Crawford guys are somewhere, whatever, you know about those guys. So 3 years later, I will tell you that from the 2 million tapes that we had in the library, 2 million tapes, we identified about 400,000 things worthy to digitize. You know, red carpets and interviews was worth digitizing. The fifth season of MTV's Date My Mom, not so much. And so we digitized like 350,000 assets. Everyone in the beginning said, if you're doing it, that's great. You're doing God's work. But if you're not going to get serious about metadata, don't even bother. So we allocated probably one third to half our funds on metadata, working with like offshore operations and our own setup downtown, and that worked out well. We just curtailed the Vault project. We've got like 350-400 digitized, most metadataized. So this is a good story. I know a lot of people are wondering about digitizing their libraries. I just spoke to Dave Mazza the other day up at the Olympics and such. But that actually worked out well. And we have a lot to learn from it, mostly about metadata. Just transitioning into AI, we just began working with some companies, and I'm not gonna go too much longer, we just started working with some companies where they're washing the video with face recognition, with brand recognition for all the obvious purposes. Whether it's data for sales, our sales force is very into sharing data with clients and brands and sponsors. It's a whole other operation for a whole other day. But whether it's washing the video with facial recognition, brand recognition, if we want to search for hot tubs, if we want to throw 30 years of real world into the hopper and filter for hot tubs and do a hot tub special. But also if we wanted to run 35 years of red carpets and search for Madonna and do a Madonna 40-year anniversary special. These are all simple off the top, easy to reach fruit that are able to do. And of course our data science and our sales groups are incredibly interested in this. So that's where we're evolving from the digitization and the metadata, and now we're just getting into the whole AI of it all.
Great. Steve and Andy.
We were lucky because in 2002, our building was too small, we had to move. And so we had two choices. We could move and take all our tapes with us, or we could move and change it, and we changed it. And we began to digitize our content. Now, CNBC's pull rate is extremely different than most. There's about a year unless it's something major, Martha Stewart gets indicted. Other than that, there aren't a lot of things from our past. It's the same thing. These things, the Daily Shows for us, they're gone in a 30th of a second after it leaves our studio. It's over. The data's not fresh. The market data is not interesting anymore. So, but what we did is we started digitizing in 2003. We allowed the folks to take your library. We gave them 10% of the storage they had before we started the project. We said, clean house, pick up your stuff, bring it in, and the deal will be every time you go to use something, every time you take the tape and you throw it away or dispose or recycle it. So what happened was we were pulling stuff the first couple weeks, and then all of a sudden we found out that the library that was sitting there was the same library, and so we stopped. And whenever we do use something now, it's a small corner of the building, you know, a couple feet wide, we take it, we digitize it. The nice thing about that was when we went HD, it was very easy for us to flip over the library and have it. And it was all great, and I used to wake up at night thinking that the whole thing is in one corner of our building in Englewood Cliffs, New Jersey. And especially one winter we had a nor'easter, the power went down, our generators were great, they fired up, and the lightning hit a water tower in the neighborhood, and we lost cooling water to our chillers. And we were able to get a truck that was filling up a pool in the neighborhood and charge our systems and stay running until we could get trucks into and out of. But it made me realize that we have our whole library in one place. So one thing I will say, Comcast has been extremely smart and long-sighted about this. We built another one in Dry Creek, Colorado. So we have a master in New Jersey and an identical copy in Colorado. It took us about a year to get the copy to be exactly the same as the master. So we're very lucky, which is for the next phase. If we hadn't digitized this stuff, we'd be out of luck. We did digitize. Our metadata was very crude at first, but there was something there. There was times, there was dates, there was recording, there was file formats, there was reporters' names, sometimes there were stock names, there was competing stock names. That's just getting richer and richer now, and then once Andy's project comes to fruition, we'll have a ton of interest and metadata surrounding it.
The big question is, once you digitize all your tapes, what do you do with the tapes? The big question is, do you have the balls to toss the tapes? Or do you continue paying for storage? That's the big question is, when you digitize all your tapes, your 1-inch and 2-inch, your cassettes, your Fakakta digibetas, when you digitize all your tapes and everything's on servers and fancy stuff and I could use all the words, Signiant and LTO and all that, do you toss the tapes to save the Iron Mountain costs? That's the big question.
How much film is still...
I got two stories for you. The CNBC story was easy. They're gone. And we did it at night. Nobody knew they were gone. Everything's digitized. You have it. And it was amazing how quickly people started putting things onto flash drives so they could still have something in their desk. But NBC News was another story. And so I was involved in a project at NBC News to try to do the same thing that you're doing. And you go back, you know, 50, 60 years. So the first thing I said is, how much is this? Oh my God, it's a ton. It's gonna take 25 years to digitize this stuff. Then I found out that all the important stuff had already been digitized. Where's the Kennedy assassination? Digitized, great. Guess what? I'm not throwing out the Kennedy assassination film. So we have a ton of content still. The biggest question is, what do you do with those nightly news, and what do you do with those shows that weren't a big day, that weren't anything in history, and how do you do it? I'll tell you what they did with, meaning NBC News, they donated the audio to the Library of Congress. And the Library of Congress digitized it and made it available to us. So we tried the same thing in video, and they had learned their lesson. There was no thank you, but no thank you. But you think about it, there is some value to those things for someone. And the question is, how much and how do you do it? And can you automate some of it? And unfortunately, with a tape, you can only do so much.
So I'll just say that, and I'd be remiss, Jamie Duvenier from our team walked in. I was just talking about the vault, and Jamie's actually the headmaster of the vault project. So I should that's enough. So there's no gift basket. I'll tell you what we did. So we literally digitized 300,000, 400,000 tapes. We didn't throw out the tapes. We talked about it a lot. There are some people. especially bean counters who really are really checking every nickel, and they're asking, they're like, well, no, now we don't have to pay Iron Mountain costs. But we really, like you have Kennedy assassination, you've got Bruno Mars when he's 3 years old dancing on the plaza. Mm-hmm. We got stars before they were stars. Lady Gaga when she was just a regular girl on some game show called Boiling Points when she was 15 and just walked into the wrong place at the right time. Mm-hmm. We've got gold. So for the 10 cents a tape that Iron Mountain will charge us to put into deep, 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 deep storage, not Hollywood or Munaki, but Pittsburgh in the hill, we decided to keep the stuff. And we fought about it. There were people who really wanted us to toss the tapes, and I'd be sitting with them, but I'm like, do you have your parents' 8mm movies? Did you digitize those? Did you throw out the little reels? We decided to keep the tapes. So, you know, I don't know if that's indecisiveness or non-confidence on the digital movement. We'll know in 10 years or 20 years, but we decided to keep our tapes, but move them into deep, deep, deep storage in the mountain.
Andy, did you have any hand in keep the tapes or toss them?
We're not quite there yet.
Okay.
In terms of the storage and things like that, I'm more interested in what we do once we've attached the data to it, once we've digitized it. What mm-hmm. can we do with all that? How can we monetize it? How can we redistribute this information and make it valid again? We have a project going on right now. We got access to Warren Buffett's tapes from all of his conferences for the past forever.
Forever.
Yeah. So they're very dry. It's two guys sitting up on a stage talking. But we've digitized it, run it through our artificial intelligence to do the enhanced metadata to it. And now we're working on the project. Well, how do we make this interesting? How can we make this a resource? Right? So it's using tape and things like that with the information. And how do we make it an accessible tool for our users? You know, we're less about the entertainment and more about how can people maybe learn from Warren Buffett. What did Warren Buffett do with Coca-Cola years ago when the market was like X? Okay, I can put those parameters into the website and maybe get some information and video on a similar situation. So that's where I'm more interested in it. What do we do once it's digitized? The storage they can take care of.
Can I ask how they metadata?
Of course.
How did you guys acquire your metadata? Do you have people actually typing? Do you do it as you log in? How do you do your background?
So right now, the project I'm working on is still in the NBC Universal Media Labs. And the Media Labs has a full control room, TriCaster, Chirons, Brainstorms, things like that. We set up lines, and we run the video through. And they watch it for, again, natural language processing, pulling the words out as we can, the graphic extraction, the facial recognition. And it attaches it via time code. So it's a separate RSS feed that then refers back to where that video lives and resides. And when we get it over to the website, that's what we're working on now to design what is the experience. So it's not just like a one and done, I'm going to go to this website to see how the moon landing was and see all the different conversations. It's how can I use this as a tool on CNBC.
And full disclosure, that's the Buffett project and some test projects. I'm not running the network through it yet. It has to scale. So we're going to scale it. We're going to scale it soon. We've proven the concept works. We're going to scale it. So right now, I'm doing a couple things for metadata. There's some simple stuff that comes out of the camera. We have some field producers that are entering metadata. And then we have a couple of really fabulous people that are passing through occasionally to see what's changed and add some. So it's right now, it's a little bit more human. And those folks are, by the way, highly valuable. Imagine me giving them something that pulls down. So here's a simple one, right? How many of you guys have somebody transcribe stuff when it comes in? Right, some? We do a ton, it's important to us. And so imagine having a transcription from scratch. Stop, start, stop, start. Well, we just started running our stuff through Lataku. Comes in through Lataku. Lataku does a machine transcribe, then it runs it through the machine again, their machine, and then if you pay a couple bucks, it'll run it through a human. And by that time, it's like 90% accurate. Imagine being a producer that all I have to do is change an A to a the, another to a the, and correct a few spellings. And fascinatingly enough, it starts to learn our lingo. Like, our stuff is extremely technical and financial. So we're able to do that. So that took the workload off the top. That will continue. So what I hope to see happen is a producer comes in the morning and says, let me see what the machine's churned up for today. Let me see what's coming today that's going to be relevant. And I'm a big Amazon fan. I love that. If you bought this, you might like that. I always buy something from there. Imagine putting a show together and saying, okay, today Microsoft has a big announcement and General Electric is releasing their earnings. And oh, by the way, the machine says if you need to cover those two stories, you might want to know that something else happened last night in the wires. Because right now, producing is intellect. It's hit or miss. You got some fabulous producers, and it's all your mind. It's what you remember from yesterday. It's what you're thinking. It's your gut. So take your gut, keep your gut, and aid it with amazing information and suggestive engines. And that's what we're going to try to do.
Fantastic. We're running out of time here, and I know this conversation can go on way, way, way longer than it. The time is allowing us. Does anybody have any questions for these guys? I have a quick.
We don't have time for questions. We're already 6 minutes over because I gave these guys time to get in their seats. So I'm going to be the time crunch monster, and I'm so sorry because we really could go on for at least another 10. But let's give a warm thank you. That was a great session. Totally New York. Totally expected.